You might notice we have a statue here this afternoon. It's in front of the Cantor's Amble. That's Father Michael McGivney, whose celebration of Mass for Beatification we had just today, this morning. And so they were kind enough to let us have his statue for this weekend. And then it'll go back to where it came from. Father McGivney was, he's probably on his way to becoming a saint, formally declared by the church, but the saints we're celebrating today are not just those formally declared, but they're also the men and women that are not formally declared. Your grandmothers, great-grandmothers, uncles, aunts, cousins, all the men and women who gave their life to Jesus and are now glorified with him in heaven. And what that testifies to is that whatever we give to Jesus, he gives it back to us much better than when we gave it to him. And that's especially true when it comes to our lives, because when he comes into our lives at baptism, we're dead in sin because of the fall of Adam and Eve. We are born out of communion with God and his church. Through baptism, we are given to Jesus, and he gives our life back to us in full communion with the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, full communion with his church. And if we stay faithful to the preservation of that life in us, we'll be with him forever in heaven. And that's what we're celebrating, is those men and women who persevere. I have a little sign in my office that I found at a Goodwill about 2 years ago, and it says, Faith makes all things possible, not necessarily easy. And there's nothing more true. That's why when I saw it, I had to get it, because there's nothing more true than that statement. Because faith does. It makes all things possible, but it doesn't make them necessarily easy. And it certainly was true for Jesus, and it's true for us. We all have our struggles where we feel tried. One of the things Father McGivney did in 1889 and 1890, he took care of the people during the pandemic at his time, just like we're in a pandemic. He contracted the disease and died from it, serving his people during a pandemic. When I started to pursue my vocation, I discovered I had four great aunts, talking about the saints. And one of them, I found out, was 22 years old when she, serving the people during the Spanish flu of 1918, succumbed to the Spanish flu. And at 22 years old, as a novice with the Franciscan Sisters in Dubuque, she died. I also had another great aunt, my dad's mother's sister, my grandmother on my dad's side. Her sister, I buried her at 105, same community. Had her funeral. Great honor. But I also had another aunt who was in the same community, a Franciscan. And her story and her surrender to God, her surrender to Jesus, took her all the way to China. Because back in the early 1930s, Sister Agatha Patti, my name is Father Dan Patti, this is my great aunt, my grandfather's sister. She was in the Franciscans, and they put out a call for missionaries to go to China. And my great aunt said, "I volunteer." And so she went to China. And in 1934, I discover all this when I pursued the vocation. I didn't know this. I also had a great uncle who was a priest in the Sioux City Diocese, who had contracted, at the time my aunt was going to China, he had contracted TB and had to move to Arizona to one of these places where they isolate you, because that's the way they dealt with TB at the time. And he wanted to give my great aunt his chalice to go with him to China, or with my great aunt to China. So on her way to catch the boat to China, on her way to Los Angeles to catch that boat, she stopped in Phoenix, picked up the chalice, and brought it with her into this mission. Fast forward, this is 1934. In the late 1930s, the Japanese invaded China. And we know they conquered many of the lands. By the time they reached the interior, it was early 1940s, about 1941, 1942, and they reached my great-aunt's mission, the Japanese. And what they did was they arrested all of them and brought them to internment camps. So my great-aunt, who wanted to serve the Lord, it's kind of like, you know, Lord, I didn't sign up for this. Now I'm being sent to an internment camp? They've killed a bunch of bishops and priests, and now I have to go to an internment camp and be held up? Yeah, that's what it was. Just before the Japanese got to the compound, she buried the chalice in the back of the compound so they wouldn't take it and ruin it. And she consumed the Eucharist, and then they invaded and they took everything, including them. And she was in that internment camp from 1941 until 1945, when the bomb dropped on Japan and the war was over. So the Japanese had totally decimated the Chinese infrastructure. There was no trains, roads were blown up with bombs. So my great aunt, when she was finally let out of the internment camp, got onto a wooden cart drawn by a donkey and rode it days to get back to the old convent that she was at before all the war broke out. And she went back there and she dug up the chalice. They didn't find it. And there were a couple other sisters that were with her and had gotten out of the internment camp, and they started life again in China, getting vocations, until the communist Chinese came and they said, you've all got to go. No sisters are allowed here. And so off she went now, 1951, to the United States, losing everything again. And so that the Chinese wouldn't kill the native Chinese vocations they had fostered, she, along with these other sisters, founded a new order in Portland, Oregon, with the bishop there, so they could get these native Chinese vocations out of China and safe in the United States. And then in 1956, my great-aunt died of cancer. Faith makes all things possible, not easy. I believe my great-aunt is in the heavens. And of course, my other great-aunt, who was in the same community that I buried at 105, she lived a long time, like, I forget, the funeral was like 2010 or something like that. My great-aunt, who was in China, died in 1956. Well, this other great-aunt in the same community knew about this whole story with the chalice. And in 1982, she wrote to the convent in Portland and said, I've got a nephew who's in seminary. Is there any way you have that chalice that you could send it out to me? The sisters wrote back and says, yeah, we happen to have that chalice. We'll mail it to you. So they mailed it to my great aunt in Dubuque, Iowa in 1982. She gave it to my cousin Jay, who brought it up to Minneapolis from Dubuque, Iowa, and gave it to my uncle Jim, who brought it to Hudson Jewelers, had the whole thing replated and cleaned up because it wasn't able to stand up even. It had been so beat up from all of the travels it had been through. And then in May of 1987, when I was ordained, they gave me the chalice. And it's the chalice that I'll be celebrating Mass here this afternoon with. This is the chalice. With the paten. And when they got it, it wouldn't even stand up. They had to have it totally replated and fixed. And that's what God can do. My dad, God rest his soul, he went to Woolworths when that was opened up and got a camera case, and so it goes inside so I can travel with it. And at one point, my dad said to me, "I don't know if it's so wise that you travel with that. I'm afraid you're going to lose it." And I said, "You got to be kidding me. After all this chalice has been through, I think we're okay." And see, that's what the providence of God can do. And the saints were those that trusted in that providence. And I count my aunts, though all the aunts I just mentioned to you are among them, I believe they are. They're not formally going to be canonized or anything. But anything we give to Jesus, it comes back to us better than when we first gave it to him. And so let us turn to the Lord and trust. We can surrender even our whole lives to him. And he'll give them back to us with a life that won't just go from conception to the grave, but into eternity.